Live Creative Now, episode 19.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hey, brilliant. This is Live Creative Now, and I'm Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full-color creative life. I answer questions that people leave on voicemail or send me via email or type into iTunes reviews. And every month I host a live call just for Live Creative Now listeners and insiders. And if you want to join me at the next one, you will find everything you need to know at livecreativenow.com/questions. livecreativenow.com/questions. Today, I'm answering a question that Sally typed into an iTunes review. So thank you, Sally, for asking a question in an iTunes review. Before we get on to that, though, this episode is sponsored by the Erase the Chaos Toolkit, the ebook and companion workbook to get you from chaos and overwork, you know that feeling, to the kind of full-color life your heart longs for, with lots of white space to allow your full-color life to really shine. The Erase the Chaos Toolkit will help you hone in on the specific causes of your time crunch chaos and give you the tools you need to clear your plate and make space for creative joy. You can get your very own copy at livecreativenow.com/erase-chaos. That's livecreativenow.com/erase-chaos. And now, on with today's episode and Sally's question. So Sally asked a question over on iTunes in a review, and then she sent me an email to sort of expand on what she'd written, and this is what she wrote in her email. She says, "Do you have methods or suggestions for dealing with getting the final pieces done? I have finally created a small space each day to play. I took a workshop with Lori Doctor." I've studied with Lori Doctor as well. She's great. And she says, "I play with techniques I want to explore. I play with color, words, different tools, etc. It's a nice environment where I don't worry about mistakes. And I've gotten past, most of the time, the fear of making something that isn't perfect or even very nice in this smaller scale." And Sally, congratulations on that. That's a big deal that you've gotten past that perfectionist paralysis. And she goes on to write, "Further, I have also gone and, yikes, scheduled an exhibition for 2016 or possibly 2017. I'm still confirming. Congratulations, Sally. That's awesome. But now my dilemma. I have the most difficult time transferring what I find exciting and fulfilling in my play to a larger piece. It loses spontaneity. It loses the thrill I had while exploring. I love the small, intimate space of my playbook. Pieces become stale right away. If I do manage to get a little something going on this larger scale, then I reach that point where I kind of like what's happening, but I don't know how to finish it or when to call it finished." This is probably a second question. So, Sally, yeah, there's a lot of great juicy stuff in that question. Two points come to mind. First of all, I want to tell you a story about performing. And I know you were talking about painting, and I know you're a calligrapher, but bear with me. When I wanted to learn how to play the guitar, I spent a lot of time playing the guitar in my living room. And I got pretty good at playing mediocre guitar in my living room. And the first time I went out to perform in front of more people than my cat, my hands froze. there was so much adrenaline coursing through my fingers. I couldn't get them to do what they had to do. And all the skills that I had worked on that I could do in my living room didn't translate to the stage. And what I figured out is that the only way to learn to perform is to practice performing. If I wanted to get better at performing, I couldn't do that in my living room. I had to do that out in front of people. Super uncomfortable, right? But that's how it works. It's the same with singing or looping. That's the latest thing that I've been doing. The only way to get good at doing those things in front of people is by doing them in front of people. So what does this have to do with painting or calligraphy? Well, if you want to do pieces on a larger scale, the only way that you're going to learn how to do that is to work on a larger scale. If you want to work on, do pieces on good paper, watercolor paper, or maybe canvas or board or something like that, it's not going to help you that much to continue to practice, say, on practice paper. Practice paper is cheap. Board and canvas and watercolor paper are expensive, but in order to learn how to work on them, you have to work on them. So for you, I would say, I know you love playing in your playbook, and I would say don't stop playing in your playbook, but start practicing as well, playing on larger pieces of substrate and see what happens. You'll get more comfortable if you do that. And if you approach those larger pieces with the same playful mindset as you approach your little intimate playbook, right? The second piece of this is so related. It's all related, right? It may be that, and from what you've said, it sounds like this might be going on. It might be that once you've worked out an idea in your playbook, that you're done with it. You figured it out. You've solved that creative problem. You're done. That part of you that needs creative juice is ready to move on. Now, only you know that. I don't know if that's what's going on with you, but it may be that you need to do something new in order to feel that spark of creative joy. This is not a problem. This is what I would call a feature. If this is you, if the exploring is what's exciting to you, then you might always feel like you're swimming upstream every time you move away from the exploration phase into the production phase. If you're exploring in your playbook and then you produce outside of your playbook and you're no longer exploring, that may always feel like an uphill battle for you. In his book, Uncertainty, Jonathan Fields talks about the creative process as having two distinct phases: the insight phase, it's also sometimes known as the disruption phase. And the second phase is refinement, expansion, and production, or REP for short. Refinement, expansion, and production. So first you've got this like exploration and figuring things out and problem solving, and then the execution. You've got to, you know, translate this idea that you came up with into a finished product, whatever that might be. And here's the thing. Most people are energized by one part of that process. It really fires them up. It makes them feel alive. And the other part of the process sucks them dry. This is really, really common. I actually don't know anybody who is truly energized by both parts of the process. You might be really good at both parts. And in fact, if you're a solo creator, as so many of us are, we often have to be good at both parts, unless we're going to collaborate with somebody else who's going to take the other part, right? But the part that sucks you dry, you're really going to need some help there. The part that fires you up, you don't need help with that. You're drawn to it because it feeds you. You love it. But the other part, it probably gives you the heebie-jeebies. Now, Sally, I know you're a calligrapher, and I know a lot of calligraphers love addressing envelopes. That for them feels like paid practice time. I hate it. I cannot stand addressing envelopes. It's something I dropped from my calligraphy business really early on, because it feels to me like that rep. It doesn't feel fun and exploratory to me. It certainly could be if I wanted to play with it, but the kinds of envelopes that I tended to do when I was doing envelopes were pretty limited in scope. So there wasn't a lot of room for me to really explore and, you know, innovate and have fun with them. So I stopped doing them because they sucked me dry. For me, I just love being in that discovery and exploration phase. I want to live there. And the rep phase, refinement, expansion, production, that gives me the heebie-jeebies. I need to create all kinds of systems and structures to basically force myself to do that side of things. This is a really big part of why my business creating ketubot, Jewish marriage contracts, and other artworks on a commission basis, why that part of my business ultimately sucked me dry and burned me out. Because my client work was invariably a job of taking my clients' ideas and generating a visual solution that incorporated all the elements that they wanted to incorporate. And creating the sketch, that was the fun part for me. Coming up with that initial concept, that was fun. It was challenging. And sometimes I felt like I was beating my head against a wall, quite honestly. But coming up with that initial design concept, that for me was where the juice was. The feeling of satisfaction when I finally arrived at a design concept, a composition I was happy with, oh my gosh, I would get such a charge from that. And then I would have to execute it. And that was the part that for me felt like I was dragging a very heavy load up a very steep hill. It was really not fun for me. And a lot of my ketubah designs were extremely intricate and meticulous. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can see some of the prints that I can still sell, that many of which started as commissions for clients. Plus, there were hundreds of words to painstakingly letter out, and that can be very meditative. There's something extremely meditative about doing calligraphy, but because I'm an insight person, I need more than that. It became boring for me. And like I said, I'd already gotten so much nourishment. I'd gotten like the nourishment that the project was going to give me, like 98% of the juice I had already gotten through that insight phase. And yeah, it was nice to see the finished piece, but over the years, it got to the point that the nourishment and the juice that I got from that, from seeing that finished piece, barely counteracted the energy drain from the rep phase. So where does that leave us? Well, since I figured out that I'm an insight person, I suddenly understood why I've always been drawn to improvisational art forms, social dance forms like salsa and Argentine tango. When I started playing music, I was very quickly drawn into jazz and other improvisational kinds of music. I do theatrical improv now. When you improvise, you combine the insight and the rep phases into one joint phase. It's not separated out. The improvisation is the insight. That is the creative insight. And it's also producing at the same time. So improvising allows me to get this kick of energy throughout as much of the process as possible. So I now very intentionally build in improvisation into as much of my creative life, actually as much of my life, as I possibly can. And that includes my art making, my painting life. When I paint, I have learned to approach the canvas or the paper or the board or whatever with no preconceived ideas or very little that's preconceived, and just do something and then respond to what's there. And even when I have a lot that's already going on the canvas. I've been working on the canvas for a while. I intentionally work to stay in the moment, to not let what's in my head take me down a particular road, get stuck on a particular path, when what's on the canvas is maybe beckoning me down a different path. Now, this is very challenging. It is not easy, but I think that's why I like it so much. If all I'm doing is executing an idea, then the challenge really comes down just to mastering a skill. And that can get really dangerous for me because of my tendency to get perfectionist-y and really critical of myself, because let's face it, my skills can always get better. But that's not where the juice is for me. When the challenge is one of exploration, on the other hand, when I'm kind of in this creative free fall, it's scarier in a way, of course, but it gives me that insight phase boost that fires me up. That is what gives me such a great buzz. I think it's the greatest buzz I've ever experienced, actually. And interestingly, now that I'm working in stop motion animation, I just started doing these little stop motion animations that I've been sharing on Instagram and over on my blog and on Facebook. And I'm finding myself having a much greater need to plan ahead rather than only improvising, because there's only so much I feel like I can do without planning ahead with stop motion animation. It's a very tedious art form. And I'm thinking a lot about how I can incorporate improvisation into what I'm doing so that it stays fun for me. Because, you know, if it doesn't stay fun, then all it is tedious. Because, I mean, think about it. I'm snapping like hundreds of pictures one after another with ever so slightly small changes between the pictures. And that's just plain tedious. So I'm working on figuring out how I can incorporate improvisation and exploration into my stop motion animations. So, Sally, back to you. The upshot is that there are two things you might want to consider playing with. The first is get out of your playbook. You can keep playing there, of course. I'm not telling you to throw out your playbook or anything, but start practicing on the kinds of paper or canvas or whatever it is you want your finished pieces to be on. Start doing your explorations on those pieces, those substrates. Play with that. Give your, I know it's expensive, but that's really the only way that you're going to be able to bring that spontaneity to larger pieces, is to start being spontaneous on larger pieces of paper or canvas or board. And the second thing is, take what you know about which part of the creative process energizes you. And from what you've said, my guess is it's the insight phase. And look at that and which part sucks you dry, which I'm guessing is the rep phase. And really mindfully approach your next project with that in mind. Switch things up intentionally in order to stay in the part of the process that feeds you the most. So let me know how that goes. Give it a try, and hopefully that'll inject some spontaneity and fun into your larger pieces, and hopefully you'll get something finished that you feel happy with. One final point. Your last little piece was that when you're working on something on a larger scale, you reach a point where you kind of like what's happening, but you don't know how to finish or when to call it finished. And this is why my Creative Sandbox rule number 7 exists. And that rule is, take the riskier path. Now, this is for when you are in the creative sandbox, specifically when you're in that space of exploration and play, intentionally do the thing that scares you. So if you're afraid you're going to ruin something, you feel like it's not finished and you want to add something, but you're afraid that adding something is going to ruin it, take that riskier path and risk ruining it. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? The worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to be disappointed because it didn't come out the way you wanted it to. But I guarantee you, you're going to learn something from that experience. And when you get into that practice of doing the thing that scares you, of taking that riskier path, it will become less scary and you'll learn so much and you'll get used to that experience of, oh yeah, okay, I ruined this thing, and you'll figure out what to do with it next. You might develop an entirely new technique. I know I have, as a result of quote unquote ruining pieces. You might take your art in a completely, completely different direction that you never would have thought of if you hadn't taken that risk. So that's my advice for that is remember Creative Sandbox rule number 7, take the riskier path and do the thing that scares you. Let me know how it goes. Thanks so much, Sally. So that's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me today. Would you like to get a chance to chat with me live and ask your own question about living a full-color creative life? Well, you can! Through the end of 2015, I am holding live calls on the first Tuesday of every month. Just go to livecreativenow.com/questions and click the big green button to register. That's livecreativenow.com/questions. Totally free. I'd love to see you there. Meanwhile, if you're getting value out of this podcast, I would be so grateful if you would take a moment and leave a review over on iTunes. Those ratings and reviews make a huge difference in how the show is ranked, and that makes a huge difference in helping other people find it, and that helps grow the creative uprising. So you can play an important role in this movement simply by leaving an iTunes review. Plus, I would be so incredibly grateful. Thanks again for joining me, and until next time, go get creating. Mwah! Live creative now. Live creative now. Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.